But where are you really from?
But where are you really from? Hey everyone, I'm Angela Lin.
And I'm Jesse Lin, and welcome back to another episode of But Where Are You Really From?
Today, we are talking about our respective house buying, furnishing, renos, all that jazz process, and comparing and contrasting, because if you've been following the show, I recently purchased a house in Kyoto, Japan, and Jesse has had his lovely co-op apartment for the last almost 2 years, right? So we have now both gone through the full process, because as of the time you're listening to this episode, my renovations will have been complete in my Japan house, and I'll have been enjoying my home already because I'll be in Japan during this time. We pre-record, if you didn't already know that, so sorry y'all. Anyways, so because the renovations are ending soon, it's definitely top of mind for me, and I thought it'd be fun to talk about what our respective processes were like, because one is out of the country, one's in the country, yours is also in one of the most expensive places in the US. So let's see what parts are similar and what parts are different. First, let's start before any such house existed, the research process of how we went about finding our future homes. So backing up, the like very key thing that I needed to do that is strung along the entire process for me is I needed to find an intermediary to work with in order to even buy a house. If those that are listening are interested in buying property in Japan, it's actually pretty cool because you as a foreigner have the same rights to buy any property in Japan as a Japanese citizen. The main difference is that you don't qualify for a mortgage, so you'd have to pay all cash. Obviously, depending on your budget, that may or may not be possible. Prices are very different though in Japan, so I paid way less than a fraction of what I would put as a down payment in the US for my entire house in Japan. So just keep that in mind. But because I'm not able to get a mortgage, and the main thing is foreigners can't open Japanese bank accounts, so I would not have been able to even buy a house because I can't move money within the country without this intermediary. So in terms of like finding the house, the reason I had to like back up all the way to this point is that they were part of our process a little bit for the researching of the house. Like, I thought they were gonna do a lot more for me, honestly, than they did for the researching part, but they didn't. I was initially inspired by an Instagram account called Cheap Houses Japan. If you don't know that account, I highly recommend you going there and subscribing. It's just like, you know how there's food porn? I would call this like house porn. Every single post is like usually under $100,000 house in Japan that actually exists.
I have a question. So is the intermediary like a broker or an agent or not at all?
No, they're technically not any of those things. They are literally like they found their little niche for themselves within the capitalist structure to cater to foreign buyers of Japanese real estate. And they essentially do like anything you need them to do. But they are not technically a real estate agent or broker. They get in contact with those people for you, and they take a fee for that kind of work, but they're not technically licensed to like represent you as the agent or like all that kind of stuff. Anyways, so I started by getting obsessed with Cheap Houses Japan, that account. And then in their newsletter, which I signed up for, at the bottom, there was a little blurb that was like, if you're interested in any of these houses that are in my newsletter and you need English assistance, email me and I can help you. So I emailed the head of this Instagram account / newsletter guy, and he introed us to this intermediary. So that's how I got in contact. And then essentially from there, they didn't really help me find any houses. And I used the equivalent of Redfin to just like scour the internet. And I was just like refreshing every single day within our like location, budget, like search criteria. If people are interested, the website is called Sumo, but it's S-U-U-M-O. Sumo is one of their like major real estate listings websites, and I was just like crawling that every single day. So I did my research. How about you?
Yeah, I have to say very similar. I feel like the whole internet thing has just made looking at properties easier. And to be honest, in a highly competitive market like New York, you don't really find listings anymore that are like not available on like Zillow or Street Easy. Basically, nobody has exclusive listings anymore. So like if you're on the site, you basically see all the listings. The only exception is because I've lived in this neighborhood so long, I'm familiar with kind of like almost all the storefronts, the restaurants, whatever. And I know that there are a couple of niche realty shops that work in the neighborhood. So that was also an additional resource that I hit up. And I was like, let me see what listings they have, because I think they did have maybe like just a handful of like exclusive things that were not necessarily available via any other brokerage. So the process in terms of research was very much like looking for a rental apartment. Like, here are my list of must-haves, like needs to be close to a grocery store, has to be shit on DoorDash that I can order late at night. I don't want to go outside for laundry, so I use my laundry in the basement, and it has to be like easy commute. So that's basically how I did most of the researching on like potential open houses and listings to go look at.
And did you have a real estate agent? Because I feel so confused, honestly, about the whole agent process, because there's usually like the seller has an agent and then buyers usually have an agent. But like in theory, if you're just looking online, wouldn't you just contact the seller agent directly? Like, do you need another person to pay? I'm so confused.
In theory, no. You should be able to represent yourself. But the thing is that real estate transaction in New York is very complicated. You have all these like titles and deeds you have to like register, file forms for, and the seller's agent is not interested in helping you through any of that, right? Because you don't pay them, they don't care. But they also don't want to work directly with a buyer that doesn't have a broker attached, because that means that they inherently are stuck with this person who has no idea how to go through the process of like filing all of this paperwork, which is really annoying for them. So effectively, you kind of do need a broker. That was like one of the mistakes that I made. I tried to look for a broker in the beginning, and I was like, I don't really vibe with any of these people. At first, it was like not a super serious pursuit. So I was like, I'm just gonna go by myself. And then eventually I was like, okay, I need to get serious about this. And I don't think that the seller brokers like will work with me if I don't find a buyer broker representative. But I also don't want to pay a person for nothing. So I kind of like asked around my network. And I think of a friend recommended me this guy who their friends used to close on them. But the guy was basically like both a broker and a lawyer. So he was like, I can represent you, and I can also represent you on the legal front for all the closing stuff. My rate is just built into whatever fee you pay me. So I was like, oh, cool. I don't need to pay you an extra legal fee. It's just going to come out of the broker fee. Perfect. So I did that. But that also meant that like he didn't really function like a broker normally would. Like, he wasn't sending me listings. I was sending them to him and being like, what do you think of this kind of building, this kind of listing? And he would give me his feedback. So it was a little bit of a different situation.
Actually, that's really funny, because your situation sounds like my situation then, because I mean, I don't know what the like official term is for this intermediary company and like function that they carried out for me, but essentially they did do all the paperwork for me. But similarly, I was the one looking for all the listings. I sent them to them and did the exact same thing where I was like, what do you think about this? And like, if you think it's cool, help me set up a viewing with the seller agent. So the only agent I ever, like technically actually real estate agent I ever came into contact with was the seller agent. And they just basically like showed me the house. But like all the paperwork was done by this intermediary. This intermediary, and I'm not gonna name drop them, because I actually think if you are super serious about this, you should email us. Ask for me. Like, if people are truly interested, I can email them to see if maybe they can work out like a referral situation so that you get like a little bit of money off or whatever if you're gonna use them, versus just like name dropping them now. It's like literally free advertisement for them for like nothing for anyone. So, but the fee structure was 4%, I believe, was their commission for like essentially everything up until we bought, like made an offer that was accepted, was covered under this 4% fee. And the 4% was 4% on the house price. A little confusing. So like in order to contract them, it was before any house was chosen, right? And so they're like, we're not going to just start working for you for like zero money, essentially. So let's talk about what your budget is. And you need to put down 4% of that as like a deposit, essentially. But when your actual house is decided upon, if it's more or less than that fake budget number, we'll adjust the money from there. So in theory, if we spent less money on the house than we told them we were willing to spend on the house, they would refund us the difference in what we already prepaid them. And that actually was the case, because I think we put down like 100K or something as our price for the house, and then our actual house came in at $68,000. So there was like a little bit of difference that we made up, but then of course we had to pay them for other shit, so that it was just like, just keep it in the balance. So yeah, that was their function during that kind of like research and putting down an offer process, even without being technically like our broker / agent.
So since we are talking about like broker agent contact, and now we're kind of talking about like financing a little bit, how much did you pay in just like a miscellaneous fees and bullshit to get your house?
I think that was an additional maybe like $10,000 of like everything all in.
That's actually about the same, I would say. I didn't think I needed a budget that much for closing. And then I was like, all these other like filing fees, like changing the title to your name, it was like all this crazy stuff. I think it ended up being like around like $12,000, which is bananas. I was like, I cannot believe I just wasted 10 grand in professional service fees. I don't even feel like it was any work. I would get a document and they would be like, fill out the document, and then they would shuffle it off and they'd be like, that's like $500. I'm like, are you kidding me, girl?
Yeah, actually, I'll be quite honest. I don't remember if the 10,000 was like a separate amount or if I'm lumping in their like $4,000 or whatever that we ended up paying them for the commission in that. But I agree, it's all kind of like arbitrary stuff, because it's just a bunch of paperwork. The part that really annoyed me was, you know, we're American, so we were trying to like move very fast with everything, because my perception of the real estate market because of the US is that you gotta fucking move. Like, you can't blink, at least for making an offer, right, to like get things moving. The house that we ended up buying, we initially only saw over Zoom because we had already left Kyoto at that time. We were in Tokyo and we saw the house and we were like, oh, this is perfect. Like, we're ready to make an offer. And I told my mom, and she's like, are you sure? Essentially, my mom was like, you should just go see it in person. So like, I went and took an additional round trip, 6 hour same day, to go from Tokyo to Kyoto to see it, go back to Tokyo same day just to see it in person to like be sure. But it looked exactly the same as it looked in the Zoom. I mean, there wasn't some like secret crumbling wall or some shit. And so same day, my walk to the train back to Tokyo, I emailed the intermediary, like, make an offer. But from that point, it was so fucking slow. So slow. And it was so opaque, because I was like, okay, we made the offer, and then we just like heard nothing for like 1 or 2 months, honestly. And I was like, hello? And they were like, oh, chill out, like, you Americans, like, Japanese people don't move this fast, and like, shit's happening, we just don't have anything to report. And then it got really annoying, because as soon as they finally had something, they were like, we need this today. And I'm like, bitch, I'm in Spain. Like, we were still nomadic. And I was like, you need this immediately? Like, you gave me zero notice, and you were annoyed to answer my email, and then now you're telling me I need to like immediately, overnight, like registered mail Express. This crap to you. Yeah. I was like, what?
Yeah, I had the same exact experience. Basically, like, it's ultra competitive up until the point that you have an offer secured and like agreed by the seller. And then from that point, particularly if you're buying in a cooperative like I am, because there's usually a board interview process. And if you are buying into like a fancy cooperative, sometimes that can take forever, because the people who live there are like, we want to make sure before we let this person move in, we are 100% sure they are not crazy and have the finances to contribute to the co-op, right? Because basically, like, we are pooling our finances into this building, and if you go broke or you don't have money, like, it kind of sucks shit for the rest of us, because they have to like cover that cost somehow. So once the offer was accepted, it just took a long time for them to get back with more information as to whether or not my package was fully accepted, if it was missing any information, and also to schedule an interview with the board. That's a pretty typical process when you're applying in a co-op. And same kind of thing, like as soon as they wanted something, my broker slash lawyer guy was like, you need to get this to me immediately. It would always be like, everything needs to be a certified check or like express mail. And they would like come back to me at like 4:30. I'm like, bro, the bank is closing in 30 minutes. The bank and the post office are closing in 30 minutes. Like, I cannot get a certified check and then also get to the post office to send this in time. So there were like moments like that where I was like, is this a joke? Like, what is going on?
Hey listeners, wondering how you can support us? The biggest way is by increasing our visibility by following us on Instagram at Where Are You From Pod, on TikTok at But Where Are You Really From, subscribing to our YouTube channel under But Where Are You Really From Podcast, rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts, and telling your friends. The more people we can get to listen to the show, the more we can continue spotlighting different perspectives and stories. And if you feel so inclined, we're also accepting donations at buymeacoffee.com/whereareyoufrom. Thanks y'all.
So tell me about like actually getting your keys. Like, how did you actually get them?
God, that took so long. Again, the whole process took so long on their schedule with no idea what the fuck's happening. But eventually they mailed us one key and then they made copies for us, which is a whole thing. I was like, can you make some copies for us? And they were like, we'll have to find time. I'm like, oh my God, whatever. Anyways, they made copies for us and they kept it in a lockbox in front of the house. So we had one sole key with us on our flight to Japan to see our home. And then the rest were jangling in the lockbox.
There is so much trust in this process. Like, can you imagine you show up with that key and it does not open the door to your house?
Dude, I was scared.
Through the whole process, I was like, I might be getting scammed out of all of my life savings right now. Most people imagine getting houses, right? You have this picture of like the real estate agent is giving you the keys in front of your house and it's so nice. And mine was like, oh yeah, the closing's happening at the cooperative's lawyer's office. So you have to go out to Long Island. Then the day that I was supposed to close, I was really sick, but they were like, we can't move this. So I was like, all right, let me just pop like 5 Advils. And my friend was nice enough to drive me out to Long Island. So I got there and I was basically like, I literally could have been signing away like my personal internal organs. I had no idea. I was just like, okay. And then they gave me the keys and that was it.
Actually, similarly, the part where I was like, I'm trusting wholeheartedly into you right now is in the beginning when we signed with the intermediary to do any services on our behalf, you had to sign a limited power of attorney over to them. So that I was like, oh, shoes. But I mean, if you read the document, it's like, basically it's only valid within the country of Japan and it's only valid within the realm of like anything to do with real estate. And we can revoke it at any point. So it was like, okay, this sounds really scary, but I guess we need you to do it because they needed to purchase the house on our behalf and like do sign all these documents on our behalf. So yeah.
Well, now that we've got our keys, the journey's not over yet, kids. There's more money to be sunk in this journey. Renovations and furnishing your new place.
Renovations for me, again, very slow to like actually get the process started. But once they actually were contracted and we had like all of our shit in place, their schedule was only 4 weeks, which I was like, oh shit. So it was very fast from like an actual getting it done standpoint. But the process of like contracting the renovation company and like the back and forth, because the intermediary had to like translate what we were wanting for them. Although I made their lives a lot easier, I think, than other foreign clients, because I made like very visual stuff. I used like essentially like Pinterest vision board stuff. And then like with as few words as possible, being like living room and like these pictures and like kitchen, these pictures. And then I think that helped them because then they basically came back to me with catalogs of like actual available material. And they're like, pick the ones that you want and send it back to us. So I was like, okay, kitchen, like F5 floor and like the, you know, those ones. And then it was very easy. I think it helps that like Ramona and I have a very similar aesthetic desire for our house. And honestly, a lot of Japanese homes look the same. Once you visited one Japanese house, you kind of get the vibe of like the types of materials that are available within Japan. So we weren't that concerned. It's like, oh yeah, I've seen this kind of like wood pattern before in like a different house. Like I believe that it will look fine in our place. So it was not that bad from that respect. It was just literally like the contracting, whatever. And also because we had an inspection done around the time of the offer. So it was also communicating to them, like, you need to fix all the shit that was like found in the inspection before doing the aesthetic stuff. But from a dollar figure standpoint, this is where I'm like, we crush it compared to the US. I mean, you already heard the price of my house is $68,000 for purchase. And the renovations, honestly, like, we didn't need to do renovations. It's a perfectly livable house without doing any renovations. We actually have already stayed there twice, but we want them. We want the renovations. It was $20,000 USD. For the entire renovation. And we pretty much switched everything. The big renovation was the bathrooms, because in Japan, we only have one bathroom, but they split the toilet room and the shower room into different rooms. It's very 80s looking right now, like literally blue tile everywhere, blue wall tile and floor tile everywhere. And so we totally ripped that out and just like replaced with brand new bathroom. And then we redid all the floors and a lot of the walls. The attic was like raw wood looking, and we had it like veneered with flooring and walling. And then the kitchen, we like replaced it with a brand new kitchen unit. So all of this was $20,000, including labor.
New York could not be more different. Most of the apartment was done. What was freshly renovated was like the kitchen. The bathroom looked like they had done like a touch up, but I really wanted to paint the space because it was all boring white. And I was like, I don't like this. And like, I feel like if you're thinking about buying a place, you already have in mind like what you want your space to look like, or you have some vision. But if you don't, I would highly recommend you do that while you're looking for a place, because unless you have a designer or like a friend who really knows stuff like that, like, you don't want to be stuck at the point where you're like, I'm ready to move in and I want to make these design choices, and you're like, I don't know what to do. So there's definitely that. But it cost me like 10 grand to paint this apartment. And I have a friend who lives down the street who moved into a unit about the same size, and he did like a gut reno on the place, but he told me it was like $70,000.
Okay, well, last thing is furnishing. How much did you spend on that, and how long did it take for you to like fully do that?
So by the time I had closed everything, I was like basically looking at my budget tracker of how much money I had left, because I had budgeted like a whole amount for apartment and furnishing like all together, and I was like, I don't have any money left. So just like my actual wardrobe, usually how it works is I have one nice thing, and then everything else is from like H&M and like, you know, blah 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 blah. I think I spent in total maybe like less than 10k or around 10k for furnishings, and most of that went to the sectional that I have and like nice rugs.
That makes sense. I think honestly, because we're not done furnishing yet, because the renovation has not fully completed as of this recording, so we still have like a lot of furniture we need to buy. But thus far, we had, since we stayed in the house twice already, we had to buy like essential things. Like we bought like futon beds for us because we're staying in the tatami room. We bought like a little bit of storage space stuff, and we bought a standing desk for Ramon so he could work from the office. So we've already spent a couple $1,000s. I think honestly, all in, after we buy everything, it will be close to 10k, like, because we also have to furnish a guest room, like we have to buy like expensive things like a laundry machine and a refrigerator, you know, like appliances are always going to eat up a lot of your money. So yeah, I think from that respect, Japan's not going to be cheaper than the US when you have to just like buy the things that you need to live. It's not like suddenly refrigerators are 1/10 of the cost or anything like that.
That was the only nice thing about my thing. Like, I think it's quite standard if you're buying an apartment. Maybe on the higher end, like if you're buying a high-end apartment, they may not come with certain appliances, because maybe like higher-end places, people will bring their own fancy shit. But like for kind of like mid-tier kind of apartments, like I purchased like the refrigerator, the stove, the microwave and stuff was already there.
Yeah, I think that's definitely more common in the US than in Japan. It's more common that nothing is included. Like there might be an existing kitchen unit in terms of like, they have this like very standard looking kitchen unit in all the Japanese houses that has like the sink, the cupboards, and like an empty spot. So like, I didn't actually even notice it when I looked at the house the first time because I didn't think about it at all. But my mom was like, where's the stove? And I was like, oh, there's no stove. And then I realized it's like, oh, because actually in Japan, it's common that within this kitchen unit, that empty spot, you buy a burner that you place into that space. It's a separate unit from the actual kitchen cabinet wall mounted thing. Versus like in the US, I think because stoves are usually attached to ovens. They're like all attached, but ovens aren't that common in Asia. So there's no like bottom unit. It's just like cabinets below the stove.
When people move, they take all of their appliances.
Yeah, I guess they take their burner and I think so. They take their washing machine and whatever. So when we went to go see it, they're like, this is the spot where your washing machine would go. I'm like, oh, okay. And it's like the kitchen looks big because there's no refrigerator and there's nothing there. So yeah.
Well, what's been the experience so far? The couple of visits that you've made there, enjoying your space, loving it.
It's just so nice to have your own place. For me, especially, we've been nomadic for almost 3 years now, to have a space where I'm like, I don't need to pack up after this. Like I have the luxury of leaving a jacket here if I want to, because I own this place. It's my house. And I mounted a nameplate onto the front of our, like near our front door, because in Japan, it's very common for people to put their last name on the front because, fun fact, like most Japanese houses don't have their house number on the front. It's actually very confusing. I don't know how they deliver anything because there's no like number 12 or whatever on your house. It just like exists and somehow the delivery people like know. But oftentimes people have their last names mounted onto the front because of that reason. So I put Lin, even though it's pronounced differently in Japanese, it's fine. But it's been nice.
That sounds really lovely. Yeah, I completely agree with you. It's just, it's a different level of comfort. Weirdly, even though it's like, you know, even if you rent, it's technically your own place, but it just feels like, oh, it's very nice that I own this place. And you also, for lack of a better term, feel more ownership. I clean this apartment more than I've ever cleaned any space I've lived in.
Yeah, for sure. I hear you on the cleaning. And then for me, because in Japan, the trash sorting is so strict. So I've become this like trash and recycling specialist because they only collect certain things on certain days. And then the recycling's much more rigid than in the US. Like you have to peel off the labels of any like bottles and remove the caps. Those labels and stuff are technically plastic too, so you have to like separate those, and those are collected on a different day. So I just have my own little like trash sorting corner because I want to be a good Samaritan. Like, yeah, anyways, it's nice. But as you've all heard, it was quite a long process for both of us to get to these current housing situations, but we're happy to be where we are. We're gonna throw back to you. You've now heard both processes, the US New York process and the Japan as a foreigner process. Which process would you rather go through to buy a house to live in yourself? Let us know in the comments of wherever you're watching or listening to this. And come back next week because we will have a fresh episode for you then. And until then,
bye, bitches.